everyone, welcome back. Today we're going to be taking a deep dive into ancient Israel.
Ancient Israel.
Specifically, their struggles with idolatry. And you might be thinking, ancient history?
Right.
What's that got to do with me? Well, trust me, our source material today, which is a lecture by Dr. Gary Yates on the Book of Hosea,
okay,
chapters 4 through 14, has some surprisingly relevant insights for us today.
What's fascinating about Hosea is that it uses this really powerful metaphor to explain the relationship between God and Israel, and that is marriage.
Okay, let's unpack that. What do you mean by marriage?
Well, Dr. Yates explains that God commanded the prophet Hosea to marry a woman who was known for being promiscuous.
Okay.
It was meant to be a living parable, a dramatic illustration of Israel's unfaithfulness to God.
Wow, that's a pretty intense image. So it's not just about breaking rules, it's about betraying a deep personal bond.
Exactly. Dr. Yates calls this spiritual adultery. And he walks us through a series of covenant lawsuits in Hosea where God accuses Israel of essentially cheating on him.
And one of the major ways they were cheating was through their worship of Baal, right?
Right. Dr. Yates spends a lot of time unpacking Baal worship. This Baal character was the Canaanite storm god, often depicted riding the clouds with a lightning bolt.
Okay.
He was seen as the source of rain and fertility, which for an agrarian society like ancient Israel meant survival.
So they were putting their trust in Baal to provide for their basic needs. I can see how that would be tempting.
Absolutely. The Israelites were drawn to Baal because he promised prosperity. And let's face it, humans have always been tempted by the promise of a good life.
Yeah. That makes me wonder, what are some things we might be tempted to put before God today? You know, those things that we look to for security, success, or happiness. Is it possible that those things have become our own modern-day Baals?
It's definitely something to consider. Dr. Yates even compares Baal worship to some forms of prosperity gospel today, where material wealth is seen as a sign of God's favor.
That's a thought-provoking parallel. It makes you wonder where we're placing our ultimate trust. But what I find really intriguing is how Dr. Yates shows how the Old Testament writers actually used the imagery of Baal to make a point about Yahweh's power. It's almost like they were saying, you think Baal is the one who controls the storms? Let me show you what true power looks like.
You're picking up on something really important here.
Okay.
They take the very attributes associated with Baal control over storms, the power to subdue chaos, and apply them to the one true God. It's like they're turning the Canaanite belief system on its head.
Can you give us some specific examples of that? I love seeing how these ancient texts connect.
Sure. For instance, Psalm 68 refers to Yahweh as the rider of the clouds, directly challenging Baal's image.
Right.
And Psalm 29 describes a powerful thunderstorm moving across the land as a manifestation of Yahweh's voice, not Baal's. It's like they're reclaiming the narrative about who's really in control.
That's fascinating. But it wasn't just Baal that the Israelites were drawn to, right? Dr. Yates also talks about how they were worshiping female fertility goddesses alongside Baal.
Yes, goddesses like Asherah, who was often depicted as a mother figure, were believed to grant children and abundance. This led to practices like offering sacrifices at their shrines.
So in a way, these goddesses were also promising a kind of prosperity, the blessing of children, a plentiful harvest.
Exactly. And this again highlights the human desire for security and abundance, things that we often look to outside of God to provide. Dr. Yates draws a parallel between the Israelites' worship of these goddesses and our own culture's obsession with material wealth and pleasure. He suggests that anything we prioritize over God can become a form of idolatry.
That's a powerful point. We might not be bowing down to statues, but what are some subtle ways we might be putting other things before God in our lives? It's definitely something to reflect on.
It really does make you think, doesn't it? I mean, we might not be building altars to Baal or Asherah, but what are those subtle things in our modern lives that have taken on like an outsized importance? What are those things that we're looking to for fulfillment? You know, those things that only God can truly provide.
That's a great question. And I think what makes this even more challenging is that sometimes these modern day idols, they can even disguise themselves as good things.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We can be so focused on achieving success in our careers, providing for our families, or even pursuing, you know, good causes that we lose sight of the bigger picture.
Right.
And before we know it, those things have become the driving force in our lives, taking precedence over our relationship with God.
You know, Dr. Yates brought up a point about the Israelites becoming like what they worshipped that really struck me. He gave the example of them worshipping a calf god and becoming stubborn and unyielding like a heifer.
It is fascinating, isn't it? And it's not just limited to like physical idols either.
Yeah.
The idea is that the things we focus on, the things we devote our time and energy to, subtly shape our character and values.
So if we're constantly bombarded with images of perfect bodies and extravagant lifestyles, are we at risk of becoming materialistic and superficial? If we're obsessed with achieving success and recognition, could we become driven by ambition and power?
Yeah, those are some really important questions. Like, there's this spiritual feedback loop. What we focus on shapes us, and who we are determines what we're drawn to. And that's why it's so crucial to be intentional about what we allow to capture our hearts and minds.
Dr. Yates also pointed out that this tendency to become like what we worship is especially relevant when we consider the Israelites' attraction to the Canaanite gods. Remember, these gods were often depicted as violent and capricious. Their worship involved all sorts of immoral practices.
Right. And Dr. Yates suggests that by worshiping these gods, the Israelites were also absorbing some of their negative characteristics. Their idolatry may have even contributed to the social injustice and violence that became rampant in Israel.
That's a chilling thought. It makes you wonder what kind of cultural influences are subtly shaping us today. I mean, we're constantly bombarded with messages from the media, advertising, and even our own social circles. You know, things that can warp our values and beliefs.
It's like we're swimming in a sea of potential idols, and it takes real discernment to recognize them and resist their pull. Dr. Yates reminds us that the call to follow God is a call to be transformed, to be set apart from the prevailing culture. It's not always easy, but it's the path to true freedom and fullness of life.
And speaking of freedom, I remember Dr. Yates talking about how the message of Hosea is ultimately a message of futility. He said, any attempt to find lasting satisfaction or security in anything other than God is being to fail.
You're right. The Israelites kept turning to Baal, thinking he would provide for them. They offered sacrifices, they performed rituals, they poured their hearts out to him. But time and again, their broken cisterns could never quench their thirst.
I love that analogy of a thirsty man drinking salt water. You know, it seems like it would quench his thirst, but it actually makes him more dehydrated.
It's a powerful image for the emptiness of trying to find fulfillment in things that are ultimately fleeting and superficial. But the good news is, Dr. Yates doesn't leave us in despair. He makes it clear that the God of the Bible is a God of love, mercy, and restoration.
Even when we stray, even when we fall into idolatry, God is always ready to welcome us back, right?
Absolutely. He describes God as being like a refreshing spring of water, always offering life and nourishment to those who turn to him. And there's this beautiful imagery of Israel blossoming like a lily, taking root like a cedar of Lebanon, flourishing like a grain field.
It's a beautiful picture of restoration and new life. No matter how barren our lives may have become because of our idolatry, God can bring forth beauty and abundance.
And that's ultimately the message of hope we find in Hosea. That even in the midst of judgment, God's love is always at work, seeking to redeem and restore his people.
It's incredible how Hosea, written thousands of years ago, speaks so directly to the human condition. We might not be offering sacrifices to Baal, but the temptation to find our security and identity in things other than God is still so real today.
And what's particularly striking is how Dr. Yates emphasizes that God's judgment in Hosea isn't arbitrary or vindictive.
Right.
It's actually motivated by love.
That's an interesting perspective. How so?
Well, think about it. God was taking away the very things that the Israelites were trusting in. Rain, crops, even their children.
Wow.
To show them the futility of their idolatry.
Yeah.
It was a drastic measure, but it was meant to wake them up to the destructive path they were on and draw them back to the true source of life and blessing.
I see what you mean. It's like a parent disciplining a child not out of anger, but out of a deep desire to protect them from harm.
Right.
You know, they know that sometimes tough love is necessary to help their child grow and mature.
Exactly. God's discipline is always motivated by love. He longs for our good, even when it means allowing us to experience the consequences of our choices. And the good news is, Dr. Yates reminds us that God doesn't just leave us in our mess. He's always there to pick us up, to heal our wounds, and to set us back on the right path.
You mentioned earlier that beautiful imagery of Israel blossoming again, like a desert blooming after the rain.
Yeah.
What did Dr. Yates say about that?
Well, he used this incredible metaphor of God being like the dew to Israel, refreshing and revitalizing them after a time of drought. There's this incredible picture of restoration and new life. Israel blossoming like a lily, taking root like a cedar of Lebanon, flourishing like a grain field.
It's a powerful reminder that no matter how barren our lives may have become because of our idolatry, God can bring forth beauty and abundance. He can make even the driest desert bloom again.
And that's ultimately the message or hope that we find in Hosea. that even in the midst of judgment, God's love is always at work seeking to redeem and restore his people.
Wow, what a journey. I never thought a lecture on ancient Israel could be so relevant to our lives today.
It's a reminder that the human heart hasn't changed all that much over the centuries. We're still susceptible to the same temptations, the same desires for security and significance that can lead us astray.
So here's something to ponder as we wrap up. If Hosea were writing today, what modern-day Baals might he call out? What idols are we subtly drawn to that might be hindering our relationship with the one true God? What are those broken cisterns we keep returning to, even though they leave us empty and thirsty?
It's a question worth reflecting on. And remember, the good news is that unlike the Canaanite gods, the God of the Bible is a God of love, mercy, and restoration. He is always ready to welcome us back when we stray.
That's an encouraging thought to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.